You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
Welcome back, friends. Please make sure your pod seats and tray tables are in their upright and locked position. The airlock has been sealed and docking clamps have been released for an on-time departure to the Functional Nerdverse. Okay, so every now and again, when we book people...
I do want to say, Tracy, I loved seeing all the smiling faces as Grogu was headbanging. So
that was, I mean, that's a good Grogu reaction. Sometimes we have people who are like...
Yeah.
And that's, I recognize that as an audio-only podcast, my staring befuddledly into the camera translates really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've talked before anyway, about how booking guests is sometimes me going, oh, shiny, I want to talk to this person. Or saying like, oh, shiny, Patrick would want to talk to this person. Or, ooh, insert name of patron from, you know, Functional Nerds / Patreon. And say, this person would love us to talk to this person. And this is one of those opportunities where I smashed the button and said, everyone wants to hear from the creators of this project. And I'm just super delighted to have, making time for their San Diego Comic-Con weekend out for us, the creators of Super Visible, the story of women in Marvel Comics. And that is by the author Margaret Stoll with Janine Schaefer and Judith Stevens. Thank you so much for being with us here.
Thank you. All in unison.
Thank you. Yeah, there you go. As one, the voices rise, which, you know, kind of seems in keeping with the theme.
And you didn't have to stand in line for this podcast.
No.
That's true.
Although, oh my gosh. This is Comic-Con rules, which is, you know, your breakfast was a banana you found on the run and you have way too much coffee in your system. So if we talk really fast and we're palpitating.
I'm confused. What do you mean by way too much coffee? I don't understand.
Correct.
And not enough water. Just
I don't understand as I take a drink from my coffee cup.
Yeah, the size of a toddler, your coffee cup there.
Well, it should be known for your unseen studio audience that Janine is double fisting right now.
I was so nervous that I wasn't going to have enough. I was like, what do I do? And I like made myself multiple cups of coffee to just line up so that I could make
sure. Look, there's a lot of rules for being at Comic-Con, and hydration is definitely one of them. So
this is sort of a smackdown between the functional nerds and the dysfunctional nerds.
Yeah.
The dysfunctional nerds are on the couch, and we have a lot of coffee.
I mean, if it helps get you around the bend from dysfunctional towards functional, no one's going to shame that. So for one of the most fun things for me about preparing to talk to you in this interview was getting to read through sections of Super Visible and kind of so many things I was surprised by and edified by. And I say this as a lifelong Marvel girl. My relationship with Marvel started up. We're showing off Marvel stuff again for our audio only podcast. We're zooming in on the video with the Secret Wars cover.
First appearance of the black Spider-Man costume that ended up being Venom is here in a frame behind me.
I love it.
I'm a massive Marvel fan. Keep going, Tracy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, my relationship with Marvel started in like 1990 and has sort of gone on ever since. And I know. We're going to do the whole I'm older than you flex.
Yeah.
And so one of the things for me that was most interesting was the dive into the portions of Marvel history that I know so little about that kind of come from before my time. And I wanted to just kind of make some space for you to talk about what some of the things are that were really important to you to try to capture about the story of women working in the Marvel sphere.
This is Margaret. I'll just dive in and say we did not realize the Mad Men version of Marvel Comics, which is also the story of women coming to New York in the 60s and 70s and looking for jobs in print and publishing and magazine and advertising and ending up in the Marvel space because they, you know, knew a guy, had a brother, had a boyfriend, had a husband, which was generally the way in the back door. And they made inroads after that. But we didn't know how much it would be the story of sort of women finding careers in general. We didn't know how much it would be the story of women mentorship, although we suspected that bit. We didn't know how many women there were. Spoiler, we were there the whole time. We had no idea. And that was really gratifying. And we didn't know how much sort of the negotiating, the feeling of like, I love this thing that might not love me back would be this continuing thread that women were always negotiating, I think, with the House of Ideas.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, Flo Steinberg was still in the hallowed hallways of Marvel when Janine and I were there, and, like, Margie, and, like, we had a moment actually at San Diego Comic-Con a couple years ago where we found out that Flo had passed away, and, like, these stories of these women, we knew them, but, like, we never really got this opportunity to explore it in such a way that we put their words on writing. I mean, that was the most important thing, in, I think, for us in the book, is that getting, everyone knows the story of Stan Lee and Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby, but no one knows the story of Marie Severin or Flo Steinberg or some of these, Jean Thomas, you know, Carol Suling, these incredible women, and then how they were always there. There was always a woman in the office.
Yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
I think one of the ways that your book captures that, that I think is really interesting, is that it's not exactly arranged in a purely chronological kind of fashion. We're not just being told, and then in this decade, these women were operators in the sphere. It's more sort of arranged in terms of the experience of being a woman in that kind of that Mad Men space that you mentioned, Margaret. That idea of that there are different ways that, like, even just the idea of, like, how do I find the other women who are working in this space? Let's go meet in the bathroom.
Meet in the bathroom chapter is what, that was Janine's brainchild, because we are all three different women who, mm-hmm. this book would not exist without all three of us, mm-hmm. which is really kind of a mini version of the story we're telling about the women of Marvel in general. But, like, the amount of photographs and archival material that Judy tracked down from women in retirement homes and tiny apartments and people all over the world, and, like, got people to sign permission for us to use. That was a 5-year job right there.
Wow.
Janine, coming from the editorial side, would pull on the sort of golden threads and go through these, like, hundreds and hundreds of manuscript pages and be like, here's what I see. And she has these amazing, like, do you know how much you guys are talking about the bathroom?
So they had interviewed like 140 people for this. And when they brought me on, they were like, we just need a little bit of help sort of like organizing or like structuring. And so they handed me like 650 pages. And I was like, oh,
fix it.
No, sure. And so I kind of went through and just started making a list of every time a recurring theme or something that just popped out to me as a cool theme or cool little interesting tidbit, I would write it down and then just do hash marks next to it if it kept popping up. And at the end of it, I texted the two of them and we're like, do you know that people talking about the bathroom came up the most of all of the other things? It was talking about meeting each other in the bathroom.
Yeah, but it's also like the director, one of the directors of the Captain Marvel movie, talking about how important it was when she was talking to the director of the Black Widow movie and how much they transacted in the bathroom and like put each other back up again. And that's like really what it's like to work in a space like that. So I was so happy that people were willing to come out and say all of these things. And I was so happy that Marvel Comics was so cool about it. And they were just like, tell the story. You know, Marvel Entertainment was so easy to work with. And that's one of the reasons we chose to focus on comics and, you know, this sort of nichier vibe. It is harder to work with the studios. Marvel Comics was just incredibly so welcoming that we kind of forgot we were doing it as an authorized project.
Yeah, because it felt like people were able to be vulnerable, and things that we were putting in there and were worried like, oh, maybe this will be too much. They were really great. And our direct editor at Marvel, on the Marvel side, Sarah Singer, was really amazing. Like, they really went to bat for us and, you know, made sure that the things that we felt were important, they really felt were important. And I mean, about the structure, one more thing I'll say, because I think I got really excited, Tracy, when you said it felt like people were just talking about their experience and people, you really got a feel of what it was like to be there. Yeah. And I remember when we first started talking about what the structure could be, that was something that, Margie, you said, where you were like, it's not about us deciding what the story is and finding the stuff to make sure that it lines up with our preconceived notion of what the story is. It is genuinely, this is what it is. It was like to be there at that time, at any time, in any of the offices. We just wanted to present, this is what it was like to be a woman in that space, in that time. And what you get from it, I mean, I think you get the real story.
Yeah.
So I want to pick on you.
Hold on. I apologize. Coming from, you know, being male, I'm confused by the bathroom talk. Because when you go in the bathroom, you don't make eye contact. You stare at the wall. You try to be as quiet as possible. And if someone does make a noise or if someone tries to talk to you, your instinct is you have to murder them.
See, honestly, I think there's an architectural explanation for this here, and feel free to you know, contradict this or whatnot, my partners in podcasting here. But I feel like with men, the phenomenon of the urinal and just the structure of your bodies in the use of the urinal as a space, there's no real privacy there at all. No. And that's where the whole stare forward, don't talk, no eye contact thing comes from.
Yeah.
Women's bathrooms just have stalls. You know, yeah, the stall the nightmare, is the all perfect. And
the
so
nightmare, the nightmare is the baseball park. Cause you go see a baseball game and you go in the men's room and literally there's just a trough.
Sure. And so I guess with the stalls, the stall is like the perfect, we are in here for same or similar purposes, and yet there's a modicum of privacy. And so you can transact conversational business, so to speak, without it feeling like, I don't know. I just think there's a fundamental architectural permissiveness.
My boyfriend used to write for the New York Times, and he said in the morning, the paper, the day's paper would be laid out on the floor of the stalls, and people would, because I guess you're spending more time if you're a man in a stall, right?
Yeah.
That's for other business. And I'm glad we're getting to the important thing. They would like pass sections back and forth to each other that they had worked on, even like sitting in the stall in the morning. For women, I'll tell you, Patrick, the restroom is where you can cry, right? Yeah. If you work in a male space, it's where actually a woman in the game industry said, pinch right here, unseen studio audience. I'm pinching the skin between my thumb and forefinger. She's like, pinch right here in a meeting really hard with your nails. You won't cry. But this is where these tips are managed. That's the whisper network of the women's restroom. And that's because, like, in the game industry, there were no other women in the restroom. It was my private office on the third floor, right? Like, it's about kind of use patterns. There are so few of us in general that it's our secret clubhouse. Oh. Just like they think it is.
Well, I guess part of how that curtain into the world of being a woman working for Marvel is pulled back is absolutely the work that you did, Judy, and in finding all the images and the sort of archival personal objects and records and things. And I'm really kind of curious about how you went about that process. Did you have to like just like a list of names? I want to see like who has whatever, or did we have certain things you really wanted certain people to help you focus on?
Just to be super clear, that's not all Judy did. I mean, like the foundation of the book was leveraging relationships she'd had because she'd interviewed many of these people on the red carpet for the Women of Marvel podcast for years. So we were like leveraging, they trusted her was a lot
of
nice. Right.
The openness of the book.
Excellent point. Yeah.
Yeah. And Judy wrote, you know, we all wrote and edited and worked on the book, but Judy did have a special role because she is also a photographer, video producer. Yeah. With the visual assets of the book.
I mean, to echo the point, like this book comes from the Women of Marvel podcast, which comes from the Women of Marvel panel that was started at San Diego Comic-Con all the way back in 2008. And it was these conversations we were having with these women and in public. And then that transcended into the podcast that was started between myself, Janine, along with Adrienne Cohen, who's actually in the room with us right now, and Sana Amanat. All four of us. Adrian and I actually had breakfast today. We did not have banana we found on the floor. But Janine's, let the record show, Janine's getting her second cup of coffee.
Well, but also let the record show those are small cups.
They are.
You see me.
It is not a venture. Yeah. But we meet all these people over the years and we'd connect with them. And so when we started sending out these emails in, and I think also this book was written in such a time period that I think was, we were doing all these interviews from January to like May 2021. We as a society were in a weird place. And so we had a lot of emotions. And so I think that really also allowed us to get these incredible conversations. But what would happen was I would talk to like one woman who used to work at Marvel. And then she'd be like, actually, have you talked to these five other women?
Yeah.
And I would be like, no. Okay, do you have their phone numbers or their emails? And so it became this like almost whisper network of connecting all these people.
Yeah.
And then because the person who connected me was a trusted person, I'd be like, hey, do you have any photos? And they're like, yeah. Yeah. Do you want photos? We'll send them to you. And it actually, at a point, we had too many.
I was actually just going through it to make the, because we have a panel on Sunday. So I was just going through all of the photos that the archive that Judy put together. And I was like, there's so many photos. I knew that there were, but there are so many that I wish. I mean, people were giving us baby pictures and drawings from when they were kids and, pictures of Halloween costumes, pictures of Marie's, which I actually think we did put in there, pictures of Marie's art supplies that she would have on her desk. One of my favorite things was all of the grainy flip phone pictures of someone's scrapbook that they made in the 70s that just had their handwritten notes on it. And that's all that's left of it. Right. Mm-hmm. So we were like trying to get them scanned in better. And the wizards at Simon & Schuster were able to do a little bit of restoration for us. We get that in there. But it's just unbelievable, the amount of stuff.
If you haven't yet, you have to open the book and look. What was it, like page 268 or something? You have to look at the picture of like the first or second Comic-Con because it is so hilarious. All these little boys in suits and ties and like three or four women in their little A-line dresses, like in a hotel in New York City.
And we also wanted to use the photos to represent all the women we didn't speak to, because obviously there's like a point where you have to be like, we've talked to so many incredible people and they're even more incredible people. Like we have to edit ourselves. And so I really wanted to use the photos to showcase the women that have passed or, you know, have been lost to the ether, you know, like they've left Marvel and no one talks to them anymore, or the women that are currently working there today that are still making incredible content that like joined Marvel after the fact or young, and like that the photos were really a representation of like just how many there are. You know, we've always been here. So,
but Marvel is really also like, you know, comics is sequential storytelling. It is a visual medium. So in some way the photos were a kind of proof, even, you know, in another part of your brain, even beyond the incredible stories people were telling about it. Taking the bus down from the Catskills to commute to work every single day.
Holy crap.
Like writing in letters to the editor because you couldn't write in the comics, and compulsively basically like writing your way into comics, you know, just that way. And meeting other fans that way because you know the names of the other people from the back of the issue. And how that would,
you know, it's
Dan and saying like, I know there are no heifers in the bullpen, but give me a chance.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I did actually write, but I wrote it to DC, but I wrote a letter once for the Star Trek comic, because DC had the Star Trek comic and they brought back Savick, which was one of my favorite Star Trek characters.
Right.
And I wrote a letter. They published the letter and they published my name and address, and I got letters from other fans based on that. It was this connection thing. And that's how I got the very first thing I ever wrote published in a fan fiction piece. Because a guy reached out and said, hey, I'm doing a fan fiction thing on Savick. Do you want to write a story? And I'm like, sure. And I wrote a story and sent it to him and he published it.
That happened for women. That was a pathway we heard about more than once.
That is incredible.
It's like the internet before the internet, right?
It is.
Like the world's slowest message board.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you send that letter off. You don't know if anybody's going to read it. You don't know if anybody's ever going to see it.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like writing a book about the history of women in comics. Putting it out there. You don't know what's going to happen. But we did have a we have a really strong sense of mission because no one was tracking this. This is not a strong suit of Marvel's archiving, you know, like the lives of past creators. They're just, it's just not like that. You sit down to write a Marvel comic and the first thing you do is go to the fan wiki because the fans have like very good continuity and, you know, you can track down what you need to know about the very beginnings. So like, we really had an urgent sense that, and these women were starting to die. Some of the best stories we got were from some of the older contributors. And I have to say, when Judy and I were at the book's launch in Brooklyn, the dozen or so women who came out who had participated in the book, one of whom, Jean Thomas, who was one of the first women to create, to write a female character in 1972, there were three, and was married to Roy Thomas, who was editor-in-chief. She was like, I drove into New York City for a book event. So excited. And they passed around the book and signed each other's copies like a yearbook. And it was so gratifying. That was so exactly what we wanted this to be. We read so many books that were about the history of comics where women are not mentioned for 300 pages. And we know they're there because we're talking to all of these women while we're reading these books. So that was really part of the project, is just beginning, trying to get the word out there that, you know, that let the record show that they were always there, and trying to get this onto curriculums and into libraries so that girls can say, oh, look, girls were always reading comics. You know, like, this is part of our history, too. That's the end of my PSA.
I love it.
I work that in every time.
You mentioned before that Marvel as an entity was really cooperative with the process of pulling this together. And it sounds like you've done them some really significant favors in helping them rediscover and preserve their own history when they themselves weren't doing much of a job of it. But I am also wondering, do you think that this is a book that could have, that the Marvel that you worked with today could have greenlit this type of book and been a cooperator and an authorizer of the project 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago? Like, are we just at a different kind of place now than we were for this conversation?
I mean, I think that it, that's such a great question. I think that it waxes and wanes, and even in the community of people who were talking about here, wanting to discuss being a woman in comics waxes and wanes over the years, right? When I started working at DC in 2004, and the feeling was, oh my gosh, like, you know, a woman is working here, right? Even though the longer I worked there, the more I realized, wait, there's actually a lot of women here. Right. It's just that the feeling is that there aren't a lot of women there. And then over the next 25 years, what year is it? 21 years. You know, it became something that people realized. I think when you, I don't know how to say this in a polite way, but it's like when people realize that there is a way to, I'm going to use the word capitalize, and I mean it in, you know, the best possible way of that. When it becomes a plus for companies to talk about it, that is when they're more incentivized, because unfortunately there's a group of people out there who don't want to talk about that and for whom it is a detractor.
Well, there was also often, keep on going.
Really quick. And often I think the women who get zeroed in on in those conversations, it can actually open them up to some very difficult a very difficult situation. So I don't know. Maybe there's a way, but I don't know that it would have been received the way that it's received now. And so I think it almost would have been worse off for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that the work that we did on the panel and the podcast and the lessons that we learned through the conversations, I think was really interesting. Like, we had a panel early on before we started doing the podcast where someone came up and said, there's clearly women working in comics. Why do you need this panel?
Right.
And it's like, it's one of those like existential crises where like, yes, we shouldn't have to showcase that there are women or that there are people of different skin tone or different, like, you know, they pronoun, like all that. We shouldn't have to, but yet we're still in a place where we have to. And it should be, it shouldn't be like, this isn't like a spotlight on those who aren't helping those type of people. This is just a celebration of these people. What,
that's such a good, I feel like we just had a mind meld, because I was literally thought the word celebration and then it came out of your mouth. That's amazing.
I would like to say though, it is a difficult time right now for women and for any, you know, any under URM, as they say in the game industry, I don't know where else they say it, but like underrepresented minority in a content space, as it is anywhere. So I would point out that it is a journey. And I liked how you said waxes and wanes, Janine, because it's not a straight line. We take our victories everywhere they come. We've talked a lot with women about, is this, you know, is it a victorious story? Does it have a happy ending? What is it like? What is the trajectory of being a woman working in mainstream superhero comics? Because beyond Marvel, you can actually like, you know, we're talking about an industry at large and the history of it. And, you know, one of the hero's journey for a woman in comics is about seeing yourself as a hero, right? It's for a character in comics. It's about from being a sidekick and a side panel to the center of the page and the star. When I was little, I desperately wanted to be Wonder Woman because her comic was called Wonder Woman and she was the protagonist. And I had this like hunger for protagonism in general. I wanted to be the main character. And I think women still, that's a journey. And I feel that like there was a lot more fanfare, for example, not pointing fingers, but when this book was announced 5 years ago, because that's how long we spent on it, than now. It was an easier time 5 years ago to celebrate being a woman in comics, you know, or URM than now. So, and we are seeing that quietness everywhere. And it's not just one company. And
there's a kind of a chilling effect, I think, that we are beginning to see take hold with the question of, there's certainly been lots of corporate entities in the recent past. We're recording on July 26 for folks who want to time date stamp this. But there's been some recent action by different corporate entertainment content, you know, creating and content distributing entities that suggest that they may not have the stomach for doing even very small things that continue to platform people whose life experience doesn't look a very narrow sort of way, or whose view of things doesn't look a very narrow sort of way. And it can be really discomforting to imagine that the work that you're doing is emerging into a world that might be on the precipice of a waning phase, to borrow your language, Janine.
Yes, but we have powerful allies in content creators in general, in librarians and teachers who are still on the front lines of those fights. I've had a book banned in Kansas City school district. We see the response of people in media to being squished, and we're not the executives who make those decisions, but we are voices. And like I say all the time, this book is just the beginning. Like now the work is, let the record show we were here. Get us, you know, have your curriculum have, you know, coverage that there are women in, you know, in the history of comics and talk about it, you know, because that was reality. That is reality. And so it's up to us to work differently than we've worked. But yeah, it is a down time for sure.
Yeah. I'd like to try to end on an up moment if we could. And because I think that's good for all of us, especially as we're getting towards the close here and to release you into the wilds of San Diego Comic-Con. But I'm wondering if each of you can highlight a moment in the book or in the project of the book that was for you particularly rewarding. It was a discovery. It was an opportunity. It was just something that you've really taken with you since.
That's a great question. I will answer. I actually got to meet her in person. So the story of mentorship, without the word being mentor, has existed through time, right? It's about there being another woman in the room. And if starting all the way back with Flo, there was always one other woman, right? And so when there was another woman in the room, you felt a little bit more comfortable. And that you can literally follow through the entire line until we hit about the late 90s. So in 1998, obviously Marvel filed for bankruptcy. It was a weird time. Comics obviously had the bubble had burst. So there weren't that many women. There were still obviously women in the office, but there weren't any women in the comics at the period of time. And then they hired this woman, Jenny Lee, who joined. She wasn't technically part of editorial, but she was Mackenzie Cadenhead's mentor, and Mackenzie Cadenhead became Sana Amanat's mentor. And Sana obviously is, you know, we are all incredibly inspired by her. She's doing still incredible things at Marvel Studios, and Sana Amanat co-created Kamala Khan along with G. Willow Wilson. Like, that was the thorough line. And then once you connect Sana, then you connect us, yeah. then you connect the women that have come past. And, but we didn't have that connecting piece. Who was that right. last piece to connect? And that was Jenny. Mm-hmm. And Mackenzie was like, oh, do you want to talk to Jenny? And so on a Saturday afternoon, we talked for 3 hours and just about things. And it was like this moment where I was like, the story, there's the story. I found it. I remember texting Janine and I was like, and Margie, I was like, I found the story. It's here.
Well, it's particularly important because for men in comics, it didn't work that way. Mark Waid is fond of saying breaking into comics is like breaking out of jail. Once you find the like hole in the wall, the first thing you do is spackle it up so no one else can get through it. You know, like, it is not that way for women in comics. For women in comics, they are holding the door open and making sure you are okay, usually in the bathroom, the whole way through. And I would also point out Mackenzie Cadenhead is not a name that people generally know, but is the person who we always asked, who could you most imagine as the first female editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics? And invariably, the name that came up was Mackenzie Cadenhead. Who left Marvel Comics partly because she married the president of Marvel Entertainment and thus was forced to go her own way. But that is also the complicated story of most of the women we talked to, was navigating a family or personal or, you know, a way in a back door that then, you know, they had to deal with as a woman, wife, mother. So that was super interesting to me. Mm. What was yours?
I think, so speaking of the family stuff, Jean Thomas really spoke like so with so much vulnerability.
Jean Thomas, former writer, so creator Thank of 1972's
Night Nurse, yeah,
and also married to editor in chief Roy Thomas, who she later split from, but and then becoming a teacher. Go on.
Thank you. That was great. I think she spoke with so much vulnerability about, you know, Marvel and I mean, comics in general. And I think Marvel probably of all of the houses feels to me, as I've worked at a few of them, but to me feels the most like this is a family. You get to know everybody and, you know, this is your work family and we're found family and all this stuff. And it really makes you feel that way, especially because it has like a real, a foundational history of there being literal family.
Yeah. Well, Stan got his job from his aunt, right?
His like uncle.
His uncle.
Yeah.
No.
Aunt?
Yeah.
His aunt.
It's like, it goes all the way back.
So, but then when you leave, it is really, really difficult. It is a difficult departure when you leave.
Yeah.
Because it is like, if you're no longer in the space of that, it's hard to feel like you're still a part of that family. Yeah. And that wasn't something that even though I am still obviously close with a ton of the people that I met there and I know I can call on them at any time and they're really supportive. There is something that you feel a great loss when you leave. And it's something I haven't personally been able to articulate in the 10 years since I've left Marvel. And seeing Jean talk about that and how she said, it feels like you're cut off from your whole entire family.
Yeah.
And it is so bittersweet to join the family, knowing that if you leave, you also lose literally your family. So, and her watching her sort of process through that and then showing up at the event and being like, this feels like a catharsis.
Yeah.
You know, so that was like cool to see. It's a thing we all off the cuff say, oh, comics will break your heart. Ha ha ha. But like, it's not something we really talk that much about with a lot of vulnerabilities. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool to see that on the page.
And I will say, like, the people who have left Marvel built their own community. Most of them have moved upstate New York. They just live up in the Hudson Valley. They like have breakfast. They like hang out on the weekends. Like some of them have gone on to do what they actually wanted to be, like artists and painters, or they're living their retired lifestyle. But like they still talk to each other, which is back to this village, this network that all we needed was one person from that village. And then they connected us to the rest. And so like, even though it may break your heart, you still have this community. I mean, we are example, right? None of us work for Marvel anymore, but we still have this incredible community of people that we've met over the years when we worked there.
That's awesome.
It is an amazing
I think my favorite moment, sorry, it was interviewing with Kelly Thompson, who took over Captain Marvel after I was writing the ongoing, and then who said, talked about how great it was the 1 year we overlapped in the Marvel Creative Council together, and then how bummed she was to come back the next year and I was gone. And she was like, did I take Margaret's seat? And so we sort of talked through the one girl chair, and I was like, no, that's not how that works. And,
yeah.
You know, like, I was so happy to see you there. And there's, but like, we had that conversation in real time, and it's in the book.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting to me, that like, this is the real story.
Yeah.
Like, these are that, and that was the vibe the whole time.
Yes.
Like, that was all we were trying to do. There was no like political agenda. We were just trying to capture the real, you know, the rough and tumble, good and bad, like just take the picture of what it was. And I feel like we got there.
Awesome.
Well, Margaret, Judy, Janine, this has been a fantastic conversation, and we're so thrilled for this project and so thrilled to have had you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. This was really an awesome conversation.
All right. Well, have a great con.
Thank you. We're on to more coffee.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of The Functional Nerds. We really appreciate it. If you liked this episode, or really any of our episodes, please consider backing us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can get access to some cool stuff and help us to keep the lights on. You can also show your support by mentioning us and sharing any of our episodes on your own social channels to help boost the signal. Trust me, that can be huge.
Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake, Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really love what you do, I'm like, I'm sorry, do you know who I, like, I think you have me confused with someone else.
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.